Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Medical Monday, January 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Columbia Memorial Health. Open, adhere for the health and safety of their patients at all of their care centers. Following the CDC's standard for cleaning and screening all patients and staff, ColumbiaMemorialHealth.org. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Najendra Medici, an interventional pulmonologist with Albany Medical Center. Promises to be an interesting program, and we'll learn about this relative newcomer to the field of pulmonology today. If you have a question, give us a call now, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Najendra Medici and your pulmonology questions coming up on Medical Monday right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Najendra Medici, an interventional pulmonologist with Albany Medical Center. Dr. Medici specializes in minimally invasive procedures for the diagnosis and treatment of a wide range of pulmonary conditions, including asthma, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and cancers involving the chest and airwaves. Dr. Medici completed a fellowship at Cooper University in Camden, New Jersey. He also completed fellowships in critical care medicine and in pulmonary medicine and sleep medicine. He completed a residency in internal medicine at Johns Hopkins University and Sinai Hospital in Baltimore. If you have a question, give us a call early, 800-348-2551. We'll get you in the queue, 800-348-2551. You can also email your question to voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Najendra Medici, welcome to the program.
Thank you. How are you?
Very nice to have you here today. Many of us have heard of pulmonology or gone to a pulmonologist before, but in my memory, I don't believe we have ever had an interventional pulmonologist on this program. Tell us, as I understand it, this is a sort of a rapidly maturing and expanding part of pulmonology. Why don't you tell us what this is and how it differs from traditional pulmonology?
Yeah, sure. First of all, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate your time. So yes, this is called interventional pulmonology, which is a new and advancing field of advanced pulmonology. So at baseline, we are all pulmonary critical care doctors, but we had a 1 year extra training of interventional pulmonology, where we only specialize in procedures or interventions to treat any conditions which are cancerous or non-cancerous and include the lungs as well as airways. So the difference between us and regular pulmonary doctors who are my colleagues is that we do procedures which actually avoids surgical interventions, open surgical procedures that are supposed to be done by thoracic surgery doctors or ENT doctors, the ear, nose, and throat doctors. So the way we do it is, majority of them are using a small camera called the endoscope or a bronchoscope. That is what we usually use to diagnose and treat conditions that include the lungs and the airways. And we also do procedures percutaneously, which is through the skin. So conditions where they have spots on the lungs that could be accessed easily via skin, then we usually go through the skin with some local numbing medication. So that actually avoids any procedure that has to be involved by cutting. So these are the advantages of what we do. Apart from that, recent advances in interventional pulmonary is lung volume reduction. So this is for people who have severe COPD or obstructive lung disease from smoking or emphysema. So these patients who cannot or who have been doing pretty poorly despite being on maximal treatment. So these are the patients back in the days used to go for a surgical procedure called lung volume reduction. So we do the same procedure, but without surgery, all using a camera called a bronchoscope. So the way we do it is, we put the camera and we put small one-way valves in the part of the lung that is not helping with the oxygen or helping us with the breathing properly. So like that. So we collapse the part of the lung, so people feel much better because that part is actually overinflated and not helping with the breathing. So back in the days, as I mentioned, surgery was the only way to go. So in these patients, so a lot of patients are very sick to undergo procedures, and they are too unstable, and they have a lot of complications after the procedure. So like this, doing endoscopically or with a small camera, the side effects are very, very minimal, and the outcomes are really good. So this is something we've been doing at Albany Med right now, and it's FDA approved in 2019, June of 2019.
We're joined today by Dr. Oh, go ahead, Doctor. Finish that up.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Are the outcomes better than in traditional pulmonological methods of treatment?
Yes, they are. So the outcomes, what we looked into is the patients, the mortality is low, and the complication rate is also low. So the only complication with this procedure is a collapsed lung. So because of that, we tend to watch the patients after the procedure in the hospital for 4 days. And after fourth day, they go home. And they're closely monitored because the risk of pneumothorax or the collapsed lung is there for 3 months. But it's around anywhere between 20 to 40% in the first 4 days. But the rate actually goes down pretty abruptly after 4 days. So we tell them to be cautious for 3 months. And after that, the risk is very slim. But the outcomes are pretty good. The quality of life is improving. People could walk further without getting short of breath. Their breathing tests improve, and obviously less hospitalizations because of that. We did our first patient last month since I've been new to Albany, and the patient did very well, and the patient got discharged. Patient was on oxygen before. Now the patient is not requiring so much of oxygen, and sometimes even off oxygen. Even though this is not the primary outcome, this is an extra benefit we got. Sometimes we get this extra benefit as well of coming off oxygen.
Well, welcome to the Albany area, Dr. Nagendra Medici. Nice to have you here, and we'll talk more with you in a moment. We'll take a quick break here. It is interventional pulmonology today on the program, and we'll get to your calls in a moment. 800-348-2551 is the number. Vox Pop on Medical Monday, 800-348-2551. Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Nagendra Medici of Albany Medical Center, and we talk interventional pulmonology today. And before we get to the phones, Doctor, you know, you've come to Albany at a rather strange time in our society. There is a pandemic. And I just wondered, have you been treating patients who have come in with COVID-19?
Yes, we are. I've been a trained pulmonary critical care doctor, so part of my training is pulmonary and critical care. So as a part of it, I've been treating COVID patients since the pandemic started, because in New Jersey, when I was training, obviously we had the COVID outbreak as well, the pandemic as well. So we have been treating COVID patients. In fact, I am in the COVID ICU starting today for the whole week.
What are you learning about this illness that we may not know?
Um, So, you know, there's a lot of development, at least, you know, the research is showing some light on multiple aspects of the disease. So obviously, the vaccine is a big invention for the big progress in regards to the disease. So what we've been learning is, I know there's a lot of back and forth, at least, you know, there's a question about vaccine and for COVID patients, for the COVID, to avoid COVID infection. People are being a little skeptical about, you know, whether to receive a vaccine or not. But, you know, we've seen like all the studies, at least in a way the vaccine got approved, are pretty pretty strong studies. They obviously not showing any side effects or, you know, everything has been studied appropriately. And definitely, you know, the difference between patients who have received vaccine and not received vaccine is definitely different. There's 96% protection in patients who did receive compared to patients who did not receive vaccination. So that's definitely a big thing. And also what we have learned recently is, so there's a chance of reinfection as well too in patients, COVID patients who have already had prior COVID. And there's a misconception about patients not getting once COVID, patients had COVID infection before because of the antibodies they develop. So they do have some protection for a few months, talking about 2 to 3 months. But after that, the antibody levels in the patients who had infection usually declines, and they are prone to getting reinfections. So there was a study this morning from England or UK where they actually looked to see the chance of reinfection in patients. So they found around 4 to 5 months, the protection is there with the antibodies. But after that, the chance of infection goes up. So that's something new we came across.
In the course of your duties and your interventional pulmonology and perhaps mm-hmm. using a flexible bronchoscopy or whatever, have you seen evidence? Now, in the general population, we have more medical stuff thrown at us, and mm-hmm. we don't understand most of it. But one thing that I have heard again and again is that this will sometimes leave lung scarring. Are you seeing evidence of that?
Yes, we are. So the lung scarring is on the CT scans or the CAT scans. So patients who have, because this is an inflammatory disease, the COVID is an inflammatory disease, because of overwhelming inflammation, there happens scarring as well too. So this is this has been noticed in a lot of patients after a few weeks of infection who have been gradually on the in a high oxygen requirement or who've been sick. We've been noticing scarring in approximately around the 3 to 4 week duration from the onset of symptoms. Mm. We've been noticing that a lot.
We're joined today by Dr. Nagendra Medici from Albany Medical Center. Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551 on this Medical Monday. June is in Pittsfield. June, you're first.
Yes, hi. Hi, doctor. I have bronchiectasis, and I was wondering if, and I'm told there's no treatment for it and there's nothing to be done except to just put up with it. Has there been any change in that, and do you know of any treatment for it?
Hi, June. How are you? With the bronchiectasis, is this cystic fibrosis related or is it non-cystic fibrosis related? Bronchiectasis.
Do you it's not CF.
Okay. So I don't think we have. Unfortunately, we don't have much advancement in the area of bronchiectasis, especially with the non-cystic fibrosis patients. I am not sure up to what degree of bronchiectasis you have. But, at this point, what we're doing right now is, avoiding more destruction that causes more bronchiectasis. So this is a catch-22 situation where you have bronchiectasis because of that secretions are not cleared properly. And because of the secretions not cleared properly, you get more infection. And the infection makes more destruction. So this is like a constant cycle. So that needs to be, you know, broken either way by, you know, doing good expectoration or airway clearance methods. So, you know, as of now, pretty much, you know, this is what we've been doing. It's very obviously, you know, it's not, it's an area of our pulmonary medicine where, you know, no new drugs have been like, you know, come in or, you know, any advancement in that. If it comes to a point, obviously, you know, there is a, like, you know, this destruction is significant. You know, there's a, you know, lung transplant is an option, but, you know, it's not very common.
Okay, I kind of thought so, but I thought I'd see maybe something was coming up, but I guess not. All right, well, then I'll just continue.
Well, June, thank you very much.
Until I don't.
Thank you for the call. We're joined today by Dr. Nagendra Medici, an interventional pulmonologist with Albany Medical Center. We go to Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
What lasting damage does the COVID virus do to the lungs, and how does it compare with the tuberculosis?
I'm sorry, Jim, can you repeat the question again for me,
please? He said, what lasting damage does COVID do to the lungs, and how does it compare with tuberculosis?
Okay, so tuberculosis is a different entity. This is an inflammation. The COVID is an inflammation, whereas tuberculosis is an infection. So tuberculosis is usually infective. It's very infective and spreads widely. And the disease spectrum is different from like, you know, usually get cavities in the lungs, and there's destruction of the lungs. Whereas with the COVID, remember it's been a year, so we don't have any evidence so far causing cavities in the lungs. What it does is scarring in the lungs. So this we've been seeing in patients who are really sick. And not every patient who's sick has been getting the scarring, but the scarring is the tissue, the lung tissue, is being scarred from the amount of inflammation, like overwhelming inflammation. So so far there's no data. Obviously, you know, once it is scarred, there's no turning back. But there's no data on how these patients have been doing. We've noticed the scarring in patients who have overwhelming infection called ARDS, which is acute respiratory distress syndrome. We have noticed similar scarring as well too. So in those patients, there's no treatment as of now to stop the scarring. We don't know if there's any progression further, or it's just gonna, you know, have a decent amount of scarring and just stay there. But that is where COVID is. Whereas tuberculosis, as I said, is an infection, and it's a progressive one until you know, we take care of the infection and treat the infection with tuberculosis for a few months. Whereas this is an inflammation.
Now, once the scarring happens, then there is literally nothing you can do about that scarring?
That's correct. As of now, there's no reversing as of now.
Dr. Nagendra Medici joins us today. We talk interventional pulmonology, and our number is 800-348-2551. Robert in Phoenicia. Robert.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Yes, good afternoon.
A little over a year ago, I turned 65 and decided to get a baseline established on especially some things that I've never gone for. So I went to a pulmonologist, and in the back and forth, he asked me if I was experiencing a runny nose. I said no. And then, of course, as soon as I left, I realized that maybe just a little, and then as the weeks went on, I realized I actually was having what you could call a runny nose. It wasn't really running, but I did have to blow it occasionally. It wasn't persistent. I was wondering, do you know why he asked me that?
So this is part of the questionnaire for us. When we remember, it's from top to bottom, we ask all the questions. A lot of times, runny nose probably could be in the setting of chronic rhinitis. It could be from, you know, so just to establish if you have any allergies, If you have any like sinusitis, you know, this could probably cause.
I do have a deviated septum. Uh-huh. I don't know if that makes a difference.
That, yes, that actually increases the risk of having a runny nose, and congestion. So I think it's the part of questionnaire, probably, asking. Yes, yes.
Not some life-threatening concern.
No, it's part of questionnaire. We always ask if there's any weight loss, you know, even though they're not related to the lung system, we always make sure, you know, we're not missing anything. It's part of the questionnaire.
Robert, thank you very much for the call. We're joined today by Dr. Nagendra Medici of Albany Medical Center, and we talk interventional pulmonology today on the program. The number, if you have a question, is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Medici, let's talk for a minute about biopsies. The comparison between the traditional lung biopsy and new interventional methods, explain those differences for us.
Sure. So for the biopsies, especially for the lung cancer screening, you know, when there are any enlarged lymph nodes around the windpipes, the recommendations right now since 2011, have been replaced by endoscopic biopsy. So the only need, all the societies which are pulmonary as well as surgical societies have endorsed to do biopsies using a bronchoscope and not an open biopsy. So the only time the open biopsy or the surgical biopsy, which is done using a mediastinoscopy by the thoracic surgery doctors, is when the lymph nodes around the windpipes are not accessible by the bronchoscope. So that is the only indication for them to do, thoracic surgery doctors to do biopsy, a mediastinoscopy. So the advantage of thoracic surgery doctors in doing that procedure is they could get a bigger chunk of tissue for the biopsy, especially with those lymph nodes where that cannot be accessed with the bronchoscope. But other than that, there's no difference between a surgical biopsy as well as a bronchoscopic biopsy. With the yield of the diagnosis, so both of them are pretty much the same. That is the only reason why all the guidelines have been changed to biopsy with a bronchoscope instead of a surgery called a mediastinoscopy.
You know, I'm curious as to how and why this subfield has developed. Many of us have been to a gastroenterologist. We've had endoscopies. They've been around a long time. What has changed in either the technology or the materials that has allowed interventional pulmonology to flourish in the last couple of decades?
That's a very good question. So I think it's the technology is what has flourished in the recent years. The latest technology in the interventional field currently is a robot. Back in the days, we used to have, you know, a robot for surgeries, and that is what we used to know. But now in the last 2 years, they've been robots, bronchoscopic robots, which have been used in a lot of big centers, and more and more people are curing this bronchoscope because of the ease of doing procedures with minimally invasive methods. So there's definitely exponential invention of technology or advances in technology that has come into place, and because of that, so the procedures that could be done surgically could be accessed with minimally invasion like bronchoscopes or some newer techniques that actually could avoid surgeries. So because of that, there's more and more of people who are turning towards interventional pulmonary. And remember, since there is no surgical surgery that is done, so the recovery time is much less, and people come as outpatients and leave on the same day. From the outpatient clinic after the procedure is done. So the ease is definitely the pain and discomfort is less from these procedures. Hospital stay is less. The yield is pretty much the outcomes is pretty much the same. So that's why more and more people are actually leaning towards interventional procedures rather than surgical procedures.
We're joined today on this Medical Monday by Dr. Nagendra Medici, and the number is 800-348-2551. Stephen is in Pittsfield. Stephen, you're on.
Hi, guys. I was wondering, is there any data about what percentage of the people who have COVID will experience lung damage and lung scarring?
No, we don't have data as of yet. So it's still an evolving field. So the studies so far, to my knowledge, haven't shown any light on that as yet.
Would you guess that it's a very small percentage of the people who have COVID experience lung scarring, or can't you even do that?
If you ask me, I can't give a number, but I would say it'll be a small percentage of patients.
Okay,
so we
great.
Started a post-COVID treatment, post-COVID clinic, where we're following up on the patients at our institution who have been had COVID and experiencing some respiratory symptoms. So we've been closely following these patients on outpatient basis with close monitoring of breathing tests as well as x-rays to see how the progression is. So we've been having a lot of patients in the past 2 months.
Mm. Dr. Magendra Medici joins us today. You know, before we take our next break and then get back to the phones, I just wonder, when I was a kid, one of my older relatives, distant relative, had what they called fluid on the lungs. I don't really know what it was, but I remember it was quite a procedure, and hearing this secondhand, it did not sound like a pleasant procedure to get rid of this. Is this new sort of less invasive technology you're using, is it able to deal with something like that?
Yes. Yes, so that is called, the fluid around the lungs is called the pleural effusion. As you mentioned, there's definitely a lot of change in the management of this fluid around the lungs. So now we do initially a diagnostic method is to numb the skin and take the fluid out for a sample of fluid to see what exactly is the cause of the fluid. So depending on the cause of the fluid, we actually started doing two things right now. So one is, let's say the fluid is going to be recovering all the time, and we know if it's probably from the cancer or there's no way of stopping it, then we do something called a catheter that is called that goes under the skin and goes around the under the skin into the fluid, and it stays in the body. So it's called the indwelling pleural catheter. So the advantage of with this is, so you could drain it every day, or symptoms occur like this, the patients could go home. They don't need to be in the hospital. So it's a very small tube that's under the skin, and maybe 5 to 6 centimeters of a small little tube comes out that is usually put on a tape. So nobody knows exactly you have a tube. So the advantage of this is more comfort for the patient. Patient could be in the house, could be at home, do every activity what they want to do. So there's no restriction, and you keep draining the fluid out. So this is one modality of treatment. And the next modality of treatment is, if patients do not want to have a tube like that, and they say, I want to get rid of this fluid, what we do is we put a small camera into the around the lungs, and we drain all the fluid, and we glue the lung together to the chest wall. So like that, there's no fluid recurrence, and the lung is glued against the chest wall. So this is an outpatient procedure. We do it under sedation. You get the procedure and go home with a small tube for a couple of days or maybe a week, and after that the tube comes off and the space is sealed forever. So there's no chance of the fluid to reoccur.
And other
so
side
are the
effects?
Advantages. So the side effects are very minimal. So some discomfort and pain after the procedure, But other than that, the procedure is very very benign.
Amazing. Dr. Nagendra Medici joins us today on Medical Monday. We have to take a quick break, doctor, and then we'll get back to the phone calls and the emails. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. It's a Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Nagendra Medici, an interventional pulmonologist with Albany Medical Center. And one email here from Judy, doctor. And Judy writes, I had tuberculosis as a child. Since it is never cured, only arrested, if God forbid I should get COVID, would it be more serious for me than for someone who is not positive for TB? And could it reactivate the TB? And that's from Judy.
So, hi, Judy. I think that is a very legitimate question. So, with the COVID, so whenever there is COVID or any infection, any sort of infection, there's stress on the body. And when there is stress on the body, there's always a chance of reactivation of few things, like tuberculosis and stuff. But we don't know if, unless it is a, what kind of infection it is, if the tuberculosis, how bad was the tuberculosis? But there is a chance, but that could be slim. So when there is a stress on the body, if it's mild infection, I don't think there'll be a lot of stress on the body. But if it is an overwhelming infection, there could be a possibility. So that is why when we even start patients on any medications or immunosuppressive medications for any treatment, we always make sure that the treatment has been there is no underlying tuberculosis. So we test for that before we start on these medications.
We're joined today. Oh, go ahead, doctor.
Go ahead. Yeah, so that's just it's good to get to know about this. With the COVID infection. There's always a possibility, but I can't tell for sure how high it is.
We are joined by Dr. Nagendra Medici of an interventional pulmonologist with Albany Medical Center. Let's go back to the phones. Jean in Middletown. Jean, you're on.
Hi, doctor. I'm wondering if you could discuss the condition of a paralyzed diaphragm. My husband a year ago, during a course of being treated for bronchitis, they said he had a paralyzed diaphragm, and I just wondered if you could just talk about that.
Sure. So is it one side, or did they say it was two sides?
Yeah, just one side, and they said, you have this, and it might come back, it might not come back, and we recovered from the bronchitis, and hasn't really had any issues, but I felt like I wanted a little more description.
So yes, so if it is one side, it's usually not a big issue with one side, because a lot of times patients are asymptomatic with paralysis on one side. Usually it's Bob, as you said, from the underlying bronchiectasis he had. A lot of times they are shortness of breath on exertion is usually one of the symptoms. After a while, patients get acclimatized. So the ventilatory problem or the problem of the breathing is usually will not be a big issue. But if it is constantly happening, shortness of breath is a big issue, is constantly bothering, then obviously you undergo surgical procedure to help with the diaphragm, hemidiaphragm. Whereas the diaphragm is paralyzed, both sides is a bigger issue. So that is usually a problem. But if it is unilateral, a lot of times patients remain asymptomatic for years because of the compensation. But if it comes to a point where it is bothering, there's always a surgical option.
Okay. That's how he described it, but I appreciate a second thought.
Well, thanks for the
call,
Jean.
Yeah, no problem. I'm happy to,
We're joined today by Dr. Nagendra Medici of Albany Medical Center. The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about pulmonology, and let's go to Nick in Liberty. Nick, you're on.
Yes, hello, doctor. Pleased to talk to you. Doctor, I'm calling you in reference to a medication that was given to me by my cardiologist to help me breathe better. So this might be up your alley. The name of the medication is ranazoline. Mm-hmm. It's ER 500 milligrams, and that's a generic for Ranexa.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to know how and in what capacity is this helping me breathe better?
So if you ask me about this, this is an ally of the cardiology doctors, but this is for somebody who has heart problems.
That could be
treated medically. So it actually acts on the heart. So let's say if your heart is too weak from whatever cause it is, you know, it might help with the heart. That might probably in return help with your breathing because they're all interrelated. But ranazoline per se does not help breathing directly. So it is probably it's going to help you from through the heart perspective. And because they're interrelated, yeah, that might help with the breathing, but clearly...
Well, I'm pleased to say it is helping.
That is good. And, I'm really happy to hear that.
Yeah, me too. And I'll tell you what, Doc, I'll let you go because I know you have plenty of people who want to talk to you. Have a good day and have a nice life. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You too.
Well, that's a very nice way to send off the call, Nick. Appreciate it very much. This email came in from Dana in Kingston. And Dana writes, I missed the beginning of the show, but I'm wondering if doctor can speak about bronchiectasis and if bronchoscopy is recommended to identify the cause. Will bronchoscopy with lavage help that condition? You better define a few of these terms for us, doctor, before you answer.
So no problem. I'll explain you what is bronchiectasis and what is bronchoscopy.
Right.
So the bronchiectasis is, the first caller who actually called us mentioned that she had bronchiectasis.
Mm-hmm.
It is the destruction of the windpipes or the air sacs. Because of that, it could be from infection. It could be from cystic fibrosis. There are multiple causes. For the destruction of the windpipes, and that causes secretions to accumulate. Because of the bronchiectasis, the secretions are usually not cleared properly. So that is the problem with this. So every time somebody has bronchiectasis, the secretions clog up, or at least are not cleared properly, and because of that, people get infection. And with the infection, there's more destruction of the windpipes, and there's more bronchiectasis. So it's an ongoing cycle.
Hmm.
So the way to stop it is by airway clearance. So the way things we could do is people could do nebulizers, which could help with the breakdown of mucus. People do like a cappella. This is like a oscillatory exercises, and that could bring up more phlegm. And people could use a vest, which helps with the percussion as if people are hitting on the chest so that more of phlegm could come out. So these are the different things that could be usually done for bronchiectasis patients. And if in spite of being doing all these things and there's a lot of mucus still in the chest, they feel too congested, then there's always a possibility of a quick inspection to see how much of mucus they have with the bronchoscope. And we could always do a lavage to see if there's any infection in there, and we could treat the infection so the mucus production will be reduced.
Hmm.
So that might help with the clearance.
Explain to me quickly, and we have to get back to the phones, what a broncholavular lavage is.
Lavage, okay. Yeah. That's right. So bronchoalveolar lavage is we put a small camera, go into the lungs. Once we inspect, so what we do is we squirt some saline into the lungs and we suck it back. So like that, there's two advantages to this. One is the secretions, which are thick and cannot be cleared, can get a little thinner, just because of the mucus of the saline you inject at the same time. So it's much easier for us to aspirate when the secretions are thick, and so you can clean up secretions with the bronchoscope by suctioning. And the third advantage is if there's any infection, so you could get some secretions directly from the lung and send it for testing. So it is like a vacuum. So you clean the inside of the lungs with saline and just suck it back and send it for testing, and also helpful for the clearance.
How much water are we talking about here?
So it depends on, it's not like, you know, it is, we're talking about probably like every time we do a 60 cc's to 120 cc's of saline, but we suck back majority of the fluid. So this is like you go to a swimming pool, you go in the beach, some amount of water that goes into the lungs when we swim, that's pretty much what happens. So maybe 20, 30 cc's of water is left behind in the water in the lungs. That will be absorbed, reabsorbed, and will be out of the system by 24 hours.
Is this a fairly new technique?
No, it's been going on. This has been going on in years, decades, actually.
Hmm. We're joined today by Dr. Nagendra Medici. And back to the phones here on a Medical Monday, 800-348-2551. Rosemary in Goshen, Massachusetts. You're on.
Hi. Hi. Concerned about pulmonary hypertension.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if there were treatments for it.
Yes. So pulmonary hypertension.
COPD and okay. Pulmonary hypertension.
So yes, pulmonary hypertension has different causes. Different diseases could cause pulmonary hypertension, and definitely COPD is one of the cause of pulmonary hypertension. So the way pulmonary hypertension could be treated in that condition is by treating the underlying cause. So that is COPD in that situation.
The underlying cause.
Yes, underlying, yes.
I think it's emphysema.
That's right.
I'm also having a mitral valve repair coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered how that might intertwine.
So
a heart valve and a pulmonary hypertension.
So I probably would defer to your whoever is actually taking care of the cardiology doctor. Whoever is helping you with the valve part, but I could tell about the pulmonary hypertension part. Obviously, you know, when there is some valvular dysfunction that causes more of a load on your lungs, and there could be extra pressure on your lungs. I could comment on pulmonary hypertension from COPD. Obviously, I'll let the cardiology doctors discuss about the valve causing the pulmonary hypertension or the extra pressure on your lungs.
Rosemary,
go
ahead, doctor.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Normally with the pulmonary hypertension, we treat the underlying cause. In our situation, is going to be COPD. That's pretty much what we do.
Hmm. Let's grab at least one more here before we wrap up with Dr. Nagendra Medici, and this is Ellen in Pittsfield. You're on, Ellen.
Hi. Doctor, I have a question for you. If a patient has bronchiectasis, can that mm-hmm. lead to the patient developing pneumonia?
Yes, they do.
It can
yes,
happen.
Because yes, because the secretions are usually not cleared properly. So if the secretions are not cleared properly, that is a good breeding ground for the bacteria for the bacteria to grow. So there's always a higher chance of infection.
Okay. Okay, doctor. Thank you very much for the answer.
Ellen, thank you very much for the call. And only a couple minutes left here, doctor. What frontiers in interventional pulmonology would you like to see expanded? In other words, in the future, 5-10 years, what will you be able to do that you can't do now?
Definitely, I think the currently we're doing lung cancer treatment directly with a small we call like microwave ablation is what we call, and we also have different modalities of treatment called brachytherapy. So I'm hoping, because lung cancer is a leading cause of death currently, I'm hoping there are more modalities that we could treat patients, lung cancer patients, who are non-operable candidates, or in other words, non-surgical candidates. So I'm hoping there'll be more advances in these patients, because right now we're offering this to patients who are have minimal diseases, this microwave ablation. I'm hoping there'll be more advancement in this field, so more people could be treated who are non-surgical candidates.
Is lung cancer, are you winning the battle against lung cancer?
So with the screening program, so we obviously, our goal is to pick the disease in the early stages. So just to give an idea, stage one patients, the survival at 5 years is around 90%. To be specific, 92, compared to 10% at stage four. So so if it is in the early stages, the outcome is good. But the later the stages, the outcomes usually are poor or slim. With new advancements, there are medications that are helping with the prolonged course of life. But at the end of the day, the earlier the better.
Well, doctor, that's a good way to leave it here. Thank you so much for being with us today, and hope we can talk again soon.
Yes, thank you. Thanks a lot, Frey.
Support comes from the Joint Replacement Center at Adirondack Health in Saranac Lake, providing tailored orthopedic procedures and rehabilitation to residents of northern New York. Better health, better lives, adirondackhealth.org. Once again, thanks to Dr. Medici of Albany Medical Center for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, Jackie Orchard, our producer, Joe Makowicz took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the program, we will bring you a broad range of financial advice from BST's Judy Cahey and Bob Canterbury. That's tomorrow at 2 p.m. Hope you join us for that. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.